Well, here we are again, and good to see you. I hope that you've had a good day. I've had a pleasant day, and I realized today that my life is not always as smooth as I want it to be. I grabbed a coat this morning and brought it to the class and looked at it, and it's like, these buttons are supposed to be gold, but they weren't. They were like overcoat buttons, and it's like, that's not my coat. So tonight I'm recycling this one, and I'll recycle one tomorrow. And that coat belongs either in Leechburg, Kentucky, or Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I'm not sure whose coat I have. No one's claimed it yet, but it isn't mine. And it doesn't quite fit. So I have those days too. I want to talk to you tonight about a subject that is somewhat awkward to talk about. It's the subject of pornography. I was asked to speak in a place over in Bowling Green, and I was told by the elders there, we want you to come and to talk with us about sex and the Bible. And what we would like you to do is start in Genesis and go to Revelation and cover the Bible on what God said about human sexuality. And 2.5 hours later, we finished. And they told me not to spare, don't worry about the clock. Well, we kind of felt like we needed to break in there somewhere. But what I learned from that, besides that I can talk for that length of time, what I learned from that was that the Bible, while it does not purport to be a sexual manual, is full of sexual instruction. And it was one of the subjects that often what will happen is we'll get maybe embarrassed about sections, or there's some of those parts of the scripture that people have said, well, I don't know if we can read that in a mixed audience. And I want to suggest to you that we are made in God's image and spiritually, and that there is a physical part of us, and the Bible is God's instruction manual on how we are to live our life in this flesh. Men are made with three main drives: to be a provider, to be a protector, and to be a procreator. And those are the three main drives that drive men. I am convinced that for godly men, that we go around not looking at how we can procreate, but looking how we can avoid being turned on in an ungodly world. And I believe that's one of the big challenges we have. The world doesn't view it that way. Men who are not Christians go out looking for opportunity. But the child of God realizes that God has put limits on our human sexuality. And that is that we're not going around looking to see who we can mate with, but instead what we are doing is we are going around seeing how we can flee fornication, how we can avoid the very appearance of evil. And so it takes a concentrated effort on the part of males today to do that. And this lesson isn't just for males. Females, too, have that desire to nest and to nurture and to find someone that they can feel comfortable with in creating a home. And so women have their end of their part of sexual desire as well. And in this lesson, I'm going to be speaking plainly, but I'll try not to be vulgar in the things I say. Some of the terms I will use, you will understand that they aren't the terms the world uses. So if I talk about self-soothing, I'm talking about sex with yourself. And so I will use some of those terms. You would understand that these aren't the terms the world uses. So I'm trying not to be crass or to be vulgar, but I am wanting to be plain to where we understand each other tonight. Now I have to ask a question, and that is, for Christians, where did you learn the facts of life? When I ask that question, and by the way, pornography is the number one reason that Christians come to see me. That is that they've got a problem with it, or that it has created a problem in their marriage. And so the question for us is, where did you learn the facts of life? And most people tell me something like this. They'll say, well, you know, I learned them from some of the magazines that the boys were bringing to the shower room, or someone had a picture in their locker, and I learned something about, or guys were talking, and I got my information that way. Some will tell me I had a talk with Dad or with Mom, and those talks appear to be very awkward sometimes and not have all the information that is needed. And essentially, what it winds up with is people have spotted information about the facts of life. That is, the maleness and the femaleness about us. I've talked to some who are very promiscuous and yet are very ignorant of their own bodies and how their bodies function. Well, where did you learn the facts of life? And I want to suggest that what we have many times done is we've allowed Satan to be our tutor. That is, we've learned the facts of life from someone who was in the world. We learn the facts of life from the devil. Everything God created is said to be good. God created us male and female. That's a good thing. But Satan has taken that which is good and turned it into a form of perversion. Now I want to go through the Bible very quickly, Old and New Testament. And this isn't going to be 3 hours. This is only a part of this lesson. But I want to suggest to you that God has said some things in the Old Testament and the New about human sexuality. And it's interesting, the things that I'm going to present here in this lesson from the Old Testament, did you know God tells us how strictly He governs the sexual activity between a male and a female? And what it tells us is that if someone is incestuous, that is, you have a relationship with someone that's very close in your family, closer in this case than a first cousin, or a first cousin or closer. And the death penalty is spelled out here, that if you have sex with your family member, then you're done, is the death penalty. By the way, did you notice there's no jails in the old? It is condemned and is part one of the things that is under the death penalty. Bestiality, that is, sex with an animal. And in that, what we see is that the penalty tells us in the Old Testament, the penalty for that is death. Now, that is not a popular thing to say today, because we live in a transgendered, LGBTQI kind of a culture. But the reality is, what God has said is that those that do this kind of thing are worthy of death if you're under the Old Testament. Well, thankfully for them, we're not. A non-virgin bride. Here's a bride that goes to her wedding bed, and she's not pure. She doesn't have what's called the token of her virginity. You don't know what that is. I'll explain that to you later if you want to ask me. But she doesn't have that. And as a result, then she is to be brought before the tribunal, and there she is to be stoned to death. The attitude of God on this is that you abstain from sexual activity until you're married. And so the two of you experience that first experience together and not one before the other. Well, the simple thing is, these are all modifications of the Ten Commandment, the one of those that says, thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, do we get a picture from this that God doesn't want us to be sexually rampant? That He don't want us to go out just hopping in bed with whoever we want to or doing anything short of actual sexual contact. God says stay away from this stuff. But let's go to the New Testament. We don't live under the Old Testament, and this does tell us God's attitude about it. So let's go to the New Testament. What does the New Testament say about it? Well, in Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 through 30, there it tells us that you've heard it said of old, you don't commit adultery, but I'm telling you that the New Testament law is stricter than that. I'm telling you that whoever looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. Now I want to notice, I'm going to come back to that verse later on in our lesson, but I want you to note that this does not condemn looking. We all look, and we look, and we can tell you who has one color hair, and who's tall, and who's maybe a little pudgy. We can tell each other all that stuff. In fact, is we better not say some of that around them if they're pudgy. But you know what? They can say that about us because they know what we look like. But that doesn't mean we go around drooling over each other. We simply have an awareness of someone's looks. There's a difference in awareness of the looks and looking with an opportunity of, with our mind, taking that snapshot that we can remember when we get in a private moment. There's a difference there. And so he says that we don't look on a woman to lust after her. Lust means an unlawful desire. We think of them in a sexual way. We look at them with an evil eye. And by the way, we're going to come back to that verse, and I'll explain that then. He talks about fornication and in these passages, and the Corinthians especially, he talked to them about not going there. Some of you used to be fornicators, but now you have been washed and sanctified and cleansed. The New Testament tells us about that, and that children of God abstain from fornication. Now, the word fornication is a broad term, and what it includes, it is inclusive of sex outside of marriage. It is not as narrow as adultery. Adultery has to do with sex between a married couple or a married person that has sex. That would be fornication, but it would be more narrow. It would also be adultery. And so we are to stay away from that. Adultery is talked about here, and that you don't cheat on your mate. Did you know that there's something that God hates more than divorce? God hates immorality. And I can say that because of this, that God tells us that he hates divorce. And yet, in the book of Jeremiah, what we find is, for this cause, God gave them a writing of divorcement and put them away. Did you know God had been divorced at one time? He divorced Israel, and he put her away. Why? Because of her immorality. Because she cheated on him. Now, from that, I draw this conclusion, is that while God hates putting away, there's something he hates more, and that is a cheating mate. And he hates that so much that he will allow you to do that which he hates because there's something he hates more, and that is a cheating mate. We do not cheat on our mates. We commit ourselves, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, and one person, and by the way, do you realize the marriage vow? I promise to keep myself for you and for you alone. Now, if you stood in front of somebody, say, in a ceremony, they probably said something like that. What does it mean, keep myself for you and you alone? What that means, for you and not me. For you and not them, but for you. In other words, when we marry, you're the only one that is going to be able to sexually satisfy me for the rest of our lives. That's the commitment. That's a covenant. And we say that when we make that marriage vow. Go back and look at those vows. Lasciviousness is condemned in the Scriptures. Lasciviousness is that which is inclined to lust or to bring up kind of our prurient interest, our sexual interests, things that turn us on. And he says, stay away from that stuff. It is called a work of the flesh. In Galatians 5:21, he talks about there. You know, here's a word we don't use in a decent context today, usually, but it's a Bible term. What we say today is, well, this is baby mama, or whatever. And that's a word that replaces this word, the word bastard. And it is so translated in the King James. And it is used in a negative sense, how God doesn't treat us like illegitimate children, but God treats us as those that were naturally born children. And so God don't regard lightly the chastening of the Lord. Now, if that means something, and what it means is biological children get treated a little differently than those that are born out of wedlock. Well, that's a term we don't use much in our culture. Whoremongers, this is the one that's going around seeing how many people he can conquer or how many that they can conquer. And these people don't go to heaven. Sodomy is condemned in the New Testament as well in these verses. And then we're reminded to flee fornication, and that when we commit fornication, we sin against our own body. Now, you can have these PowerPoints, and I know we've gone through a lot of these, but in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and we're going to look at that in some detail later on in the lesson. And what he tells us here is that we have been sanctified and set apart by God for a holy purpose. And he says that we are to possess our vessel in honor. What's he talking about? He's talking about your sexuality. that which makes you a female or that which makes you a male, and that we are to possess ourselves with honor, not dishonorable conduct, as in giving ourselves freely to be gazed upon or to be to have someone have immoral pieces with us or parts with us. All right, hold on to your seats just a minute. I'm going to get through this section. When I talk about pornography, a lot of times we're looking at the man, and the man's out here, he's looking at porn. You can turn loose of your seat for a second. All right, but a Barna study that was done by a group called the Barna Group, kind of a fundamentalist group of religious people, there was a study done by them, and what they found out in that study through self-report is that 63% of churched men, that's men that go to church somewhere, this is all denominations, 63% of them acknowledge they view porn at least once a week. Now get that. Someone says, well, what about the women? They concluded that 42% of women are involved in pornography at least once a week by self-report. That's churched women. 42%, 65%. Those are high numbers. Now, there was a difference between men and women. The men will go to the picture sites. That is, the trailers, the movie clips, the still pictures, whatever. They will go to those sites. And so the visual stimulates them. But the women don't go there as often, although sometimes they do, and this is not hard and fast. The women go to the chat rooms. They go to those sites where they can have sexual chats with somebody that's not their husband. Or maybe they can even act out sexual stuff in an online hotel. And women will go to those particular sites. If I use some terms you don't know, don't go out there on your computer to try to find it. All right? But the women tend to go to the relationship sites. The men tend to go to the visual sites. But the thing is that both of them are going to sites out not to go to. All right? And what are those numbers in the church? I don't know. I do know that that's the thing that brings people to me more than members of the church, to me more than any other mental kind of issue. I do know that this has driven a wedge in a number of marriages and that it is a problem in the home. And I do know that it leads to compulsive behaviors such as people just get deeper and deeper and deeper. Remember 1 Timothy 3:12, 3:13 says that evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. Look at that. Evil men and seducers. That's a sexual word. And it says that they will get worse. In other words, where they start is not where they stop. Now here's the addiction piece. That just like a person maybe takes a little puff of marijuana, they take a toke, or they smoke a blunt, or whatever at first, and that gets them that high. But then later on, after they do that a little while, they don't get that feeling, so they start trying to find something stronger. In the same way, that's how it is with the sexual stuff. And people go to more and more, deeper and deeper, more and more perverted kind of stuff until what is started on the screen does not stop on the screen. That's when we start bringing in people that aren't what they ought to be. We arrange a date, or we stop off by the strip club or some other place, and so forth. But while we talk about the men's side of this, I believe a major problem in congregations today among children of God is that there is a lot of defrauding going on from what I see. And when I ask people, well, what is your frequency? You can hold back onto your seat now. But when I ask them, what is the frequency that you all engage in sexuality, in being sexual with each other? And I get these kind of answers. Well, four times a year, if I'm lucky, and this was from a guy that had a porn issue, 4 times a year if I'm lucky, that's once every 3 months. Once a year, well, never, we don't ever do that anymore. Once every 6 months, or on his birthday, if he's been good that year. These are church people's answers. 4 times a day, that's a little frequent. 2 to 3 times a week, except during her period. Those are answers. Those are actual answers I get from people in the church that have struggled with their marriage. And these would be people that if the marker of their faithfulness is church attendance, they would all be considered faithful. But what's happening in that home? They have forgotten what 1 Corinthians 7 says, and that is that we're not to defraud one another. In other words, that we're that the husband's body belongs to the wife, and the wife's body belongs to the husband, and they're not to withhold from each other. We need to do more studying on 1 Corinthians 7, because there's a lot of folks that are not doing their homework on that. And I'll get to another piece on that, because I really believe that our sexuality and our spirituality are together. It's not that we're spiritual here and we're sexual over there. It all goes together. And I'll explain that a little later. All right. We need to listen to God about this. God tells us that we're not to engage ourselves in the works of the flesh. He also talks about people that are without natural affection. In other words, they don't have normal feelings for each other. God has made us to where we have feelings, we have desires for each other. But there's some people that don't have those. People who look to lust. And here's another one, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 14, talks about how people are looking outside of their marriage and they have eyes full of adultery and they cannot cease from sin. Now that word cannot, in the English, we'd think, well, what that means is they can't help it. But that isn't what it means. It means that they have looked around and lusted so often to where it has become a natural course for them, and their conscience has become seared where it doesn't bother them. These are the people that if they go into a restaurant, they're looking around at the waitresses. They are checking out whether somebody's pants are too tight, or they want to look down somebody's blouse. That's those guys. Now, that should not be among children of God. We don't undress people with our eyes. Children of God don't do that. Fact is, what we do is, if that's a problem for us, is we figure out how to sit in a restaurant where we don't have to look at that kind of stuff. And it may mean that you have to sit with your back to everybody else and stare at the wall. But nevertheless, you got to figure that one out. Children of God don't set themselves up to feed lust. Evil men and seducers wax worse and worse. And then we find in 2 Peter 2 about people who have roaming eyes that go around looking at the sisters, who look at the weak sisters. And so they're out here looking at the sisters and enticing unsteadfast souls. Now I need to say a word of an artism on this, and that is that in a lot of congregations, I haven't seen that here, but in a lot of congregations, you'll find the men like to hug on the women, and especially on the young women. And I want to tell you, we got to be careful of that. There is such a thing as a hug, and a hug doesn't need to be a feel. We need to be careful how we hug one another, and that the hug is invited, not just something expected. Remember that 1 out of every 4 females by the time they're 18 has been sexually molested. 1 out of 5 males has been sexually molested by the time they're 18. The numbers are probably almost the same. I think men underreport. But if that's the case, then people have body memories that we can trigger if we're not careful. What you will find is that if we're going to hug somebody, we might ask them, do you care if I give you a hug? And I have people sometimes want to hug me, but if you will ever notice, if I possibly can get to that, I'm in control. I will hug, but I'll have my arm around them, and this hand's going to be on a shoulder, where if we get too cuddly here, I can pull that back, you see. And so I'm not pressing someone to my body. But we need to be careful about hugging the sisters, and sisters about hugging the men. Sometimes people run up to you and just hug you like you're a saved person. But we all have the ability to have feelings. All right, Job said, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look upon a maiden. And when it comes to internet addictions, there are 10 of those. I'm not going to go into all these, but this gentleman, Patrick Carnes, is a name you want to remember. He has written a number of books, workbooks, to help men and women get through this stuff, and they usually have something to do with shadow. So he'll talk about out of the shadows, beyond the shadows, leaving the shadows, a number of those. And these are workbooks he actually uses in his 45-day workshop for men and for women who are significantly caught up in these sexual issues. And yes, it takes 45 days or more. And as they go through those teen years, they have problems with self-stimulation and with checking out things to lust after. And they feed on that. And what they fail to realize is that they are training their brain. You're training your brain to feed on fantasy. And many of those men will tell me, well, I thought when I got married and said I do, that those days were over. Only to find out that since they have trained their brain for fantasy, it can be anything you want, whenever you want. And you change the picture when you want. And we train our brain, and then when we have the reality, we realize the reality may not be as stimulating as the fantasy. And so, we continue that secret life. And in that secrecy, somebody's going to find out sooner or later. When the wife finds out, she's going to have all the feelings of betrayal, just like she found you in bed with somebody else. If the woman's doing that, the man will have the same feeling. Remember, jealousy is the rage of a man? Remember that over in Proverbs? And so when we find someone who is not being sexually loyal to us, who is caught up in an affair with a fantasy, now what are we supposed to do? And how do we get through that? And that's not as easy as saying, well, all men do that. Do you know the truth is all men don't do that? When we take a survey of the world, do you know only about 20% of men actually do the self-stimulation stuff? Almost said the word. But they do that self-stimulation stuff. Only 20% of the men in the world. In some countries where men were asked to give them a sample to check out what was going on inside their systems, the men didn't know how to do it. And so they came back with female fluids on them mixed in with their sample, because they didn't know how to stimulate themselves. Only about 20, and you know who those 20% are? By and large, they're Americans. This is our cultural sin for the majority. All right, here's the types of internet addictions. Fantasy sex, role playing, such as in the seductive role, sometimes pretending that person is a streetwalker. Had a lady the other day that said, I hate it when he asked me to be a prostitute. Voyeuristic sex, that is looking. And by the way, that's what pornography is. We're peeping in somebody else's privacies. Okay. Intrusive sex, which means that someone else is being sexual and we want to interject ourselves, pull the guy off or the woman off and enjoy that ourselves. Exhibitionism, that's showing yourself nude to somebody. Sex trading, and that has to do, that's pretty swapping, that's wife swapping or partner swapping. Anonymous sex, that is going out and find somebody you don't know and just kind of, a lot of times that's the one night stand stuff. Paying for sex or prostitution. Paying exchange, which includes such things as choking a person. Autoerotic asphyxiation. And then exploitive sex. All those are just the different types.